is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Forced wide by Myers, he dumps it to the right corner. It's taken there by Vetrano. Now back to the line for Ekblad with a drive, he scores!
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Another face-off win for the Canucks as Hunt gets it left point on the Panthers zone. Passes far corner for Garland into the slot. Dickinson shoots, he scores! Jason Dickinson from the slot threw it to the net along the ice. It got through Bobrovsky. Left wing gets it down low in the corner for Lundell. Center pass, they score! Backhand shot in tight. Right in front of the net, beats Thatcher Demko. It's Maxime Mammon. And just like that, it's 4-1 for the Panthers.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose 5-2 in Florida to start a five-game road trip. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And Dan, the Canucks tonight lose 5-2 against the Panthers. The Panthers show why they are one of the best, if not the best team in the National Hockey League this season. A lot of talent top to bottom. Good defense, can do a bit of everything for you. And they had the right game plan. Got in front of Thatcher Demko, made life difficult for him, and found a way to put five goals past him. But I will say, I don't think the Canucks, the scoreboard is really indicative of how they played tonight. 5-2, yes, that's how they lost. Demko, not a good night between the pipes. And some players you need a lot more from. And we'll talk about those guys coming up throughout the show. But even though the Canucks lost 5-2, I don't think the score really is indicative of how this game unfolded. Like, I don't think this game was completely lopsided start to finish.
It's I don't want to make excuses for this team, because given their place in the standings and the trek that it's going to be to get really into a playoff spot and really back into that conversation through the final few weeks of the season is a monumental one. But this honestly felt like a team that they just lost to the team that was sharper, that was a little bit cleaner in the big moments of the game. Their goaltender was making more saves. So much of an NHL hockey game comes down to things like that, little moments. And the Panthers were sharp. They took their chances when they presented them. The Canucks, even to the last minute of the game, were missing wide open nets. So it really did come down to, yes, the Florida Panthers, I thought, were better on the whole for the night, still deserved the 2 points. The Canucks weren't bad, but it was more about sharpness. And this team just, they haven't played 3 games in 25 days, and you have to go into the gauntlet of one of the best teams in the National Hockey League this year. That's a big ask for any team, and it's one reason why the Canucks really wanted to play against the Ottawa Senators last Saturday instead of having that game moved.
Of course, and it is a reality of the COVID world and protocol world now, right? Games are going to get postponed. And I know there's a lot of criticism about why the Saturday game got postponed, but it's always a very complicated situation when it comes to these things. But one thing is very true. It would have been better and beneficial for the Canucks as a team had they been able to play that hockey game. But hey, you would have been more it would have been beneficial to be able to play the other games before that as well, right? Because of how the Canucks had been playing. So unfortunately, the stop comes at a bad time, which does not allow the Canucks to sufficiently prepare to be game ready and on top of their game for a road trip against teams like the Florida Panthers, and then next game, that being the Tampa Bay Lightning. But overall, I think if they get better goaltending from Thatcher Demko, because he's the one who really struggled tonight, right, as far as your top-end players go, and so did Pedersen. We'll get to that, and I see people texting in. Devin says, was Petey even playing tonight? To our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And Jay and Poco, same thing. Did anyone notice him? So a lot of that sentiment is coming in. But if Thatcher Demko gives you an average to a above-average game from him, this scoreline, it's a bit different. Maybe the game's a bit more exciting in that third period. But we didn't see that from Demko, and that's something we haven't seen a lot of this year, that being poor goaltending from Thatcher Demko, or at least him not being on top of his game. And you know that he's not going to be in a funk for very long, considering the form he is able to get into once he does get into a rhythm pretty quickly.
Demko is the MVP of this team. They need him to be playing at a super high level. Every goalie playing against – every team playing against the Florida Panthers needs their goalie to be sharp. It's just a fact of life right now in the NHL. They are the second highest, if not now the highest scoring team in the league after they put a five spot here on the Canucks. And Demko just didn't have it tonight. You know, we talk so much about – rust and rhythm, all of these things apply, but do they not apply most to goalies? We're going to have Kevin Woodley on Canuck Central tomorrow. He's our Wednesday weekly regular, and we ask him these things all the time. You know, what's the hardest part for a goalie coming off of a long layoff? You lose your timing, you lose your rhythm. Just simple things that make you a half step slower, a half step off time. And it can just totally throw your game off. And I feel like that's where Demko was at tonight. And it's hard to blame him. He's been the rock for this Canucks team all season long. But it's also a fact only. Canucks needed Demko to be better tonight to have a chance against the Panthers.
Well, that's something they need to be competitive, really. If you want to be really competitive and fight for a playoff spot, I mean, you need Thatcher Demko. I mean, we know this team is probably better than what they showed early in the season. But they're also not a team that is a cup contender and has it all figured out. They have flaws and they have issues. And one of the things they need to rely on is their goaltending. And again, you don't apologize for having a great goalie. They're part of the team. And you should be proud of having one of the better goalies in the league when he's on top of his game. But it still stands. He needs to be good to great for this team to win hockey games. And tonight, that standard wasn't there. But at the same time, the Canucks also did not help him out with enough offense tonight. They had some opportunities. They couldn't finish them. And considering that Sergei Bobrovsky, as much as he's bounced back from last season, Dan, it's not like he's a goalie that's playing at a super high level anyways. So they also didn't bear down on their chances. How much of that do you think is just attributed to rust or them just not being good enough? Because I did think if you do bear down on one or two of your chances tonight against Bobrovsky, you know, again, the game might be a lot closer in the third.
Yeah, the Canucks, they had some really good chances. Bobrovsky wasn't clean. He left some rebounds there available to them in the blue paint. They just couldn't get to that spot to bang in the second chance opportunity. Credit to Florida for boxing out in the way that they did. But I just felt, you know, those are little things that the Canucks weren't doing tonight that they maybe had been doing through the first nine games of the Boudreau era. It's... when do you see JT Miller miss an open net the way that he did at the end of the game? Very rarely. You know, and it is, to me, I don't know how else to chalk it up other than a little bit of rust. Can we say the same thing about Elias Pettersson? I mean, we've seen that type of a performance all season long from Pettersson, so it's hard to crack him some excuses, but Besser got into some good areas and had some opportunities. We know Quinn Hughes hit a post, I believe it was in the first period, and there's just little moments of the game where if the Canucks are a little bit sharper, they're not rusty, maybe they finish those opportunities, and it's a completely different game because we saw how quickly this game flipped. Early on, two quick goals to start for the Panthers. Mm-hmm. Canucks weathered the storm, got one back. You try to make it up in the second. They're playing well. They're, you know, controlling the play there in the second period. They get the bad call on Mott. Two goals in 26 seconds. Game is over at that point. You know, this game was really close, but flipped on little moments that the Canucks just didn't execute.
Well, I mean, the execution definitely wasn't there. And as far as Demko's play, a lot of reaction coming in. You can grab a phone line as well, 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. You can also chime in on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. After the Canucks lose 5-2 in Florida against the Panthers, their first regulation loss under the Bruce Boudreau era, they drop to 8-1-1 now in 10 games under Boudreau.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable, right?
Getting a lot of Bruce out texts already. I can't believe you guys. Really? Come on.
one loss, and people are ready to ship him out of town. Tone Capone says, I feel they were rusty and sloppy, not the normal Demko. And this one, unsigned, says, how was that poor goaltending? Three of the Florida goals he never even saw. He let in two goals. Hard to fault him for that. Canucks outplayed Panthers, but Panthers got the puck luck. And, you know, as far as what Florida did, they did a terrific job of getting in front of him and also getting tip-ins. And they did that throughout the game. And Demko actually made a number of really good saves, one in particular on Reinhardt on a really good tip he had with his pad. So it's one of those things where Demko made a lot of good saves on it. But at the same time, he had trouble also seeing around some of those screens. He's done a good job of being able to do so. And when he's at his best, he's in position. His positioning wasn't quite what it normally is. And that's just him being off rhythm, I think, right? And when he's at his best, Dan, you see how square he is at all times, right? And he also understands his angles and his depth a lot better. I thought on that Mammon goal, which ended up being the real dagger that made it 4-1 at the time, was him not reacting at that point. But we'll talk more about that and more of your reaction. But here is head coach Bruce Boudreau at the podium.
We'll give it a moment for the questions to filter in here. And the first question will go to Ben Kuzma, Post Media.
Hey, Bruce. The Panthers kind of came as advertised tonight with that quick strike offense, the two quick goals in the first and the two in the second. How much of that was a backbreaker, even though there were some deflections tonight and some screenshots?
Yeah, I mean, they got great stick work in front of the net. I mean, they get their sticks on everything. I mean, and they were good goals. I think after two shots or three shots, they had two goals. And they're a good team that you can't give opportunities to. There's some teams that need a lot of opportunities to score. And Florida's not one of them. I think if you blink that they can score and then they get into it and they can score in bundles in a short period of time. And I think that's what they did today.
Can you take anything from the start of the second, Bruce? You guys had a decent push and looked like you were trying to, you know, narrow the deficit and then they strike. Can you take anything from tonight's game? I mean, you did outshoot them 44-26.
You know what? There's a lot you usually can take out. It's not all bad when you lose. I mean, so there's things you could take out, but there's a lot of things that we can take out that we didn't do well. And that's something that hopefully we can correct at practice tomorrow in video. And so, I mean, it's a, but I mean, it's never fun when you lose. You can get all the good things going when you're winning, but I mean, this was bringing us down to earth a little bit, and hopefully we'll just get ourselves back together and start going in a positive direction starting tomorrow.
We'll go to Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet.
Was there any particular message during the timeout, Bruce?
Well, it was early. The one thing is I didn't want, and I'd seen it in the past, you know, like when you get two goals scored against you and you sort of quit and say, oh man, here we go again. And I didn't want that attitude seeping into the bench or the locker room. And so, I mean, it was something that I thought after that, other than the one play by Barkov at the end of the period, that we were pretty positive on the bench. We were pulling for each other. I mean, hell, we got a guy fighting in a three goal deficit, trying to win the game, trying to do his job with a minute to go or less than a minute to go. So, I mean, that's the never quit that you want to see. And if you have that, then eventually you won't get back-to-back goals scored on you in a hurry. You'll be able to stop them right off the bat, I hope.
Well, it took you 5 weeks to lose a game in regulation, but you also saw in the third period a deficit that you hadn't seen before. You know, the your games have, so many of them have been close.
Yeah.
Did you like how your team handled that part of it, that there didn't seem to be a give up in the third, even though it was very unlikely they were going to win the game?
Yeah, and we said that in between periods, that we have to come out of this game with something positive. We have to win the third period. We have to stay positive with each other. We have to keep going. And cause I mean, adversity, you know, reveals character, and sometimes teams, when they get they get down, they want to blame the ref, they want to start screaming at each other and everything else, and we wanted none of that. And I thought we did a good job in the third, right to the last second, even on the power play, trying to score and having good opportunities in the last minute to score. So I think we came through with that, if that's the positive I want to take from tonight.
We'll move to Thomas Drance, The Athletic.
Bruce, you've had Jason Dickinson playing with some of your skilled players, and his minutes have been up since you joined the organization. To see him get a goal tonight, was that a matter of the offense has been coming and he was due a bounce in your view?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I mean, I also was in the Central Division and he was in Dallas and he was a heck of a player, and you know, there's more there than he's gotten credit for at the beginning. So sometimes that's another confidence issue. And once you start scoring and like you get the empty netter, I don't know how long ago it was, but one of our last games, and that probably gives him some confidence going into, even if it was an empty netter, going in today. So he was a guy that I thought, you know, for the time off that he had, he played pretty well.
Was there any thinking when you're down 5-1 there after the Barkov goal of coming back with Yaro to begin the third period?
Yeah, there was a thought, and you know, I talked with Ian about it and extensively, and we the one thing I didn't want to happen was they score 6, 7, or 8 Demko lose a little bit of his confidence. But I mean, he wanted to stay in. We went and asked him. He wanted to stay in. He wanted to fight this out, and he hadn't played in 10 games, so he needed the minutes as well. And I just didn't think it would be fair to put Yaro in the third period when he hadn't played in a while either. But there was some definite discussion about it.
We'll go to Bick Nazar, Sportsnet 650.
Good evening, Bruce. Were there elements, obviously there's positives you take away out of this this result, or you try to take out of, but were there elements of what you've tried to implement over these past 10 days that you saw that were very evident tonight, and what were they?
Well, when we get the puck behind defensemen and we're forechecking, we're very good. We create things, we make things happen. When we move pucks, we're really good. I think the biggest problem we had was, quite frankly, was making bad decisions in the neutral zone and not putting pucks on tape, making bad passes, mismanaging the puck. When we weren't mismanaging the puck, we were having a lot of ozone time and doing, you know, fairly well. So, I mean, I thought our D zone coverage was sloppy a little bit. When we were good, we were real good, but I didn't think we moved our feet enough in the first period in our D zone to stop them. I mean, they're a very skilled team. They go to the net very well. They got great sticks. So you've got to eliminate them from doing that, or you're going to be in trouble every night.
The three guys that had prolonged absences, Brock, Jason Dickinson, and Elias, what did you think of their games? Brock playing 22 minutes tonight.
Well, I thought I had to play these guys a lot to get them back where they're capable of being. I didn't think they had as much energy as strength as they would normally have had. But I mean, if you take ice time away from them after the first game like that, then I think it's more of a, it'll take more games before they get 100% the way you want them. And hopefully this one game and the one good practice we had will allow them to get back to where they were before they got the virus.
And we'll finish off with a question from Daniel Wagner, Glacier Media.
Bruce, it seemed like their forecheck gave your breakout some troubles. There seemed to be some issues breaking out of the zone. Is that something you key in on and can work on for next game? Or is that just the result of the Panthers just being a kind of a relentless forechecking team?
Well, I think any good forechecking team is going to make you make mistakes, and that's what they did to us. I mean, some errant passes in our zone definitely didn't help us, but that was because of pressure, and it doesn't matter, excuse me, if any of the 32 teams in the league, when they put pressure on you, you're going to make mistakes, and I think the inactivity might have been one of the reasons that we made as many mistakes behind our blue line as we did tonight, because we haven't been making them in the last 9 games.
You talked earlier about not wanting to just take positives out of this game, but also see those negatives and address them. Can you take a game like this and make it a wake-up call after having so much success early on here, treating this game as like, here's where we need to get to?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, just because you're a positive person by nature doesn't mean you can't learn. Like, I mean, we made a ton of mistakes today that are correctable mistakes, and hopefully that they'll understand that they're correctable mistakes that we hadn't made. So it's we'll watch it and go over it again and get back at it tomorrow and hopefully have a different result on Wednesday.
That is Canucks head coach Bruce Boudreau after a 5-2 loss against the Florida Panthers in Florida to start a 5-game road trip that continues on Thursday against the Tampa Bay Lightning in Tampa. And it was a really thoughtful post-game appearance there from Bruce Boudreau. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised, Dan, because he has been thoughtful every single time he has gotten in front of a microphone since being hired. And even after his first regulation loss as head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, I really liked his reasoning on Thatcher Demko and why he kept him in the game, right? And the logic makes sense. Demko needs the ice time still, but he did consider going to Yarrow because at the same time, you don't want Florida to put a 7 or 8 spot on him. That's not good for his confidence either. But I like the way he's thought that through with Ian Clark. And as much as people wanted to see Yarrow come in, I think it made sense and maybe a bit of a victory for Demko and, you know, the team, or at least how they could frame it as the goalies, that they didn't let it get out of hand in that third.
Yeah, and he talked about wanting to win the third, and they did that. You know, they didn't give up a goal against this Panthers team in that third period. Build some confidence, build some momentum going into Thursday against Tampa, because there's no let up on this road trip. You've got to find a way to get incrementally better as you go along. And, you know, it's really refreshing how honest Bruce has been in this, mm-hmm. his first loss. You know, he was given every opportunity by some of the questions to take some kind of moral victory in this game. You know, we played pretty well, but, you know, things just didn't bounce our way tonight. You know, look at how many shots we got. You know, there's opportunities there for Bruce to say we did some good things tonight. And it's not that he avoided that, but he really did, you know, go in on the areas that they need to be better. Sloppy in our D zone coverage. Get the puck in behind defensemen and get forechecking. That's when we're best. Our puck management was not good. You know, these are, you know, he's not afraid to be honest in the media about where the team mm-hmm. is having some struggles and disappointed him on the night. And he reinforces these are correctable mistakes. And I think, you know, it's just a very honest way of going about your media availabilities. And I love it, Zat. I do.
Well, it gives us more to talk about and more to dig into, and we'll continue doing that on the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintech can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. More of your reaction and your calls next on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now, more of the Kintech Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show. Join the discussion. Text us at 650-650 or call us at 604-280-0650. This is the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Left wing for Huberdeau. Back to Barkov in the high slot. Now to the line for Ekblad. Again to Huberdeau. Left circle. Passes side of the goal for Reinhardt. Through the seam to Duclair. Back to the high slot for Ekblad. Now for Huberdeau. Shoots. He scores!
Canucks lose 5-2 in Florida against the Panthers, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. And get your thoughts into a Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We're going to go to the phone boards here in just a second, Dan. But what's happening on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox?
We are seeing a lot on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Java from Langley, absolutely love having a coach that gives more detail in the post-game interview. If I didn't already like Bruce, I sure do now. On the flip side of that, unsigned texter, oh my God, you guys say the same thing every time the Canucks have a new coach. He says the right things. He could have taken the moral victory, etc., etc. He's the best. Come on, guys, I could have played these same comments when Green was hired, or even Torts, or any of the others. We're getting all of the different angles on the Dunbar Lumber text line set.
It's always coming in, right? Love it. Keep those texts coming in, 650, 650. We'll go back to your text messages, but let's go to the phone boards. People have been waiting patiently to get on. Let's go to Surrey, where Raj is on the lawn. Raj, thanks for calling in, man. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey guys, how are you guys doing?
Good, Raj.
Doing good, man.
Good. Well, I'm just happy that they're finally playing again. Obviously, the only place that's going to be open is Florida. Sadly, they're the best teams in the league. I just like the fact that now we're competing with some good competition. We had some pretty easy competition for the last 12, 13 games, and we did the best that we could. The one thing that I noticed today is when you play a really good team, it's not really that you're getting beat the whole time. There's one period or one specific 10-minute stretch where you lose the game. And I personally feel like that was the time when the Panthers scored the power play goal, the goal fouling short after, and the shorthanded. These mistakes that they made on their special teams today, it really could have changed the outcome of the game. It seemed like they were coming back when it was 2-1. But I'm just happy we're going to see some good competition in the next couple of days. Maybe we'll lose more than we win. That's about it.
All right. Hey, thanks for the phone call. And, you know, Dan, that's the thing. I mean, they may lose more than they win, and getting it to 500 means that you only win two games on this road trip, right? That means two wins and one loss in overtime. So you're losing more than you're winning, even if you get to 500 on this trip. So that's the challenge here, just to win two games and perhaps squeeze one more point out. That's what Boudreaux said at the goal, and now you lost the first game. And as far as the 10-minute stretch that killed you, it was in that second period. I didn't like the penalty on Mott either. I thought that was a bad call. But he's right. Those two goals, that's what swung the game at that point. And the Canucks, I thought, had played well in that second period.
They were they looked like they were going to get the tying goal, you know. And they were on, you know, when this team is playing well, they are playing fast. They're creating shot opportunities and putting their opponents on the back foot. And I felt like they did that for the first bit of the second period. But as soon as that call happens, you get Florida's power play going. They're zipping it around. Huberto scores. The backbreaker is the next goal 26 seconds later. You know, this team maybe could have sunk and turtled and just kind of coasted through the rest of the game. We saw them do that a little bit earlier in the season, but they didn't do that. They played through. They really pushed hard all the way until the end of the third. And I do feel that the organization as a whole, from new president Jim Rutherford all the way down to the players on the ice, realize how important this stretch is to what may happen and what decisions get made for this club looking ahead to the trade deadline and what sort of path Jim Rutherford decides to take for the remainder of this season with the roster. A lot of it does hinge on this stretch, because it will tell us a lot about this team, because they are going up against some of the best squads in the NHL. And just by virtue of where we're at in the calendar, you've got to make a decision on what to do with this roster in the near term, because the trade deadline is approaching fast.
Well, that's the thing. The deadline, and Tyler Mott is the only slated unrestricted free agent you have to make a decision on. The other players, well, you might get ahead of it, and perhaps you explore different things, but they're all under contract or under team control, at least the significant ones, beyond next season. So that's going to be the interesting thing. And, you know, Emily asks to the text inbox, thoughts on PD tonight. And, you know, that kind of leads into a question that Pardeep sent in, and it says, to your point about the trade deadline, also Rutherford, and Pradeep says, if this road trip is being used to gauge the team and what Rutherford and his team is planning on doing, Pedersen did not portray the effort and skill we've been hearing about at practice. Can't be a good look for him in JR's eyes. And none of us really know what Jim Rutherford is going to do with this roster, what he, who he deems untouchable or who he deems expendable. The only two players with any confidence we can surmise that he will not do anything with is Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko. Outside of that, I don't think any of us can with any certainty say that Jim Rutherford would not move said player. So right now, as far as who's showing well, yeah, right now Pedersen's not showing well to the new sheriff in town.
He had another tough night. You know, we're at the stage of I'm looking, and I caught myself doing this on a few occasions tonight, Sat, where I'm watching Pedersen and you know, I'm really honing in on him anytime he's on the ice and every shift that he takes. Oh, he didn't do this well. Oh, look, he had a nice entry and then finds Pearson streaking to the net for a decent opportunity. Did that with Höglander on a couple of chances, too. You're watching him on the power play. How's he faring there? It's just like an ultra microscope that I find myself following Pedersen with, and it's unfair because both ways I'm looking at little things that are kind of happen all the time in a hockey game and saying, oh, look, he did this well. And it's like, you know, that's a pretty low bar to be setting. He just doesn't look like himself. And again, fanning on that shot there in the third period, it's just like, what's happening with this guy right now that he just does not have the confidence and isn't executing in, you know, just some of the simplest plays you would see on the ice. That's what's kind of maddening about it. You know, handling a pass, taking a shot, fanning on it. It seems to be happening so often this year with Pedersen, and it really speaks to how low his confidence is right now.
Well, it is, and it's not even at a point when we watch this game and say, okay, he's getting close to breaking out, right? Like you mentioned, it's a struggle right now in a big way. And it's essentially been like this for most of the season. There's been more games where he's looked like this than games where he's looked like he's been really good. And I don't think at any point this season we've seen his best. I don't think at any point this season we can say we have seen peak Elias Pettersson. And now that this is his 35th game in the season, it's not panic button time in that sense for me, but you got to call it spade a spade, and he hasn't been good enough, and he's going to have to find his game at some point here for this team. So far, they've gotten away with it. It took until game 10 under Bruce Boudreau to have their first regulation loss, right? So nobody's, you know, losing hope on the team and saying, oh, these guys can't do it or whatever. I mean, they've been on a tear, and they've done this without Elias Pettersson being anywhere near his best. But at some point, if they're going to continue this run and continue to fight for a playoff spot and be in the picture, they're going to need Elias Pettersson to get going. And on a night like this, now, let's say if Demko was a bit better or, you know, you get a couple better bounces or whatever, and it's, a four-goal game, in a game like this, if Pettersson gets going, two goals is a different story. And so far, he hasn't been the difference in a game like this yet.
Well, who made the difference for Florida tonight? More than anybody else, it was Huberdeau and Barkov, you know, scoring that last goal on the breakaway. Just guys that are unstoppable. Like what Huberdeau has been doing this year is insane. He might be as good a playmaker as there is in the league right now. The pass he makes to Bennett for the first big chance that Florida has is just, you know, he makes mind-bending passes just look routine, and those are the types of things Pedersen used to do, you know, making these things that we just don't normally see happen in an NHL hockey game routine for him. And there was at least one moment in a game where he brings you out of your chair, whether it's one of his trademark dekes to get around an opposing defender. It's the one-timer, a crazy bank pass off the end boards to find a streaking Brock Besser through in the offensive zone. How many times do we see that? None of these things are happening right now with Elias Pettersson. And you need your stars to make the difference. You know, when Florida's winning games consistently, their stars are making the difference. Tampa Bay, same thing. Carolina, yeah, maybe they are the deepest team in the league, but they still need Sebastian Aho to really do considerable damage. Every team in the league, all of the top teams in the league, they're not going anywhere without their stars. The fact that the Canucks went 9 games without losing in regulation and Elias Pettersson was still just kind of one of the guys and not leading the way is impressive. But if the Canucks are going to have another stretch like that, they may need to in order to make the playoffs. They're not going to do it unless Pettersson finds his game to some level, because right now he's, as I've said a thousand times already, Sad, he's just a guy. And it's going to be hard for the Canucks to have success with Pettersson just being a regular NHL player rather than an elite one.
Well, he's going to have to find his game. If this team is going to make a push, like you said, he's going to have to find his game. We'll go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650 after a Canucks 5-2 loss in Florida against the Panthers. We go to Jake and Langley. Jake, thanks for calling in, man. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, guys. I want to talk a little bit about Thomas Drant's question after the game there. I actually think he had a little double meaning towards it, actually, because I think what he was asking, what I thought immediately from my own head anyway, is were you guys second-guessing putting in Halak with the whole, you know, play two more games contract situation? That's what I thought he was getting at more than anything. So it was actually interesting that I never actually thought about it the other way around. And it does make me think now, you know, moving forward, if Demko does get lit up, you know, again on this road trip, like, they need to make a decision on this Halak thing sooner than later, because if they don't, you know, the decision is going to be made for them, because you can't keep Demko in net, you know, getting lit up, right? So it adds a nice little wrinkle to an interesting situation. I just wanted to hear your guys' take on it. Thanks, guys.
Hey. Thanks for the phone call. And, you know, as far as that goes, what do you think of the contract situation with Halak?
I know budgets have been a hot topic in Vancouver for the last couple of years, Sat. But what are we doing here if a team is worried about having to pay out a million and a quarter type of bonus? Like, it's maybe a bigger worry for the salary cap for next year, I guess. But
yes.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine a team is basing its NHL decision-making, game-to-game decision-making on that.
Now, one thing I could see, and here, it's only logical. If I was in a position as a general manager, and I'm not, but I would be under the impression of you gauge always the value of your players. And let's say there's a player on your roster, a goalie like Jaro Halak, who has a certain clause in his deal for next season, and he's UFA. He's playing well. There are teams that need goaltending, and perhaps somebody does call. Do you entertain that? Now, you might, as far as evaluation goes, but at the end of the day, there are two other things that are involved. One, you need your backup goalie to be good, no matter what. And if you're going to be in a run or whatever, you need a backup goalie that's competent, especially when protocol can happen. And number two, Halak has a no-movement clause, so it all depends on what he's willing to do or not. It seems like a pretty messy thing to be doing in season while you're on a positive run, unless you're trying to sabotage yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's how I read the Halak situation. I'm sure you gauge it, and it always depends on the value, but I can't see that a way that they're looking to move him right now because of the bonus.
Yeah, it's of course there's going to be interest. You know, there's some teams that would love to add a quality veteran goaltender to their roster right now. I mean, there's one in Edmonton for sure. There's a couple of other spots where I could see Halak adding to a group. But look, number one, it's not going to bring a huge trade haul. And number two, you can't realistically get to a point where you're not, if Halak is with the team for the rest of the year, like, it's hard to imagine that there's a world where he doesn't reach that bonus, you know, unless he gets hurt. It just seems so to base your decision making on that, I think would be ill-advised in my eyes. But Boudreaux said flat out, talked about it with Ian Clark, went to Demko, asked him what he wanted to do. He wanted to stay in. And that's ultimately how we made the decision. So if I'm Demko, I'm like, goalie's never going to say he doesn't want to stay in, but you're probably looking at this and saying, I got to face the Lightning on Thursday. I got to find a way to be sharper. The game time isn't going to hurt me. So if I'm Thatcher Demko, of course I want to stay in that game. And if I'm Boudreaux, it probably makes sense to keep Demko in there because you know you're going to need him for the rest of this trip.
Well, that's the thing. And you do have to also play yourself into game shape. And that's one other thing he mentioned when Bick asked him about Brock Besser and, you know, him playing 22 minutes tonight. And, you know, he struggled a bit, but everybody kind of did. And he kind of said, you know, you don't want to take away ice time from him because essentially if you do, it's going to take him longer to get back into game shape, especially when he's missed so much time or not skated with the team since testing positive for COVID. So it's been over 2 weeks for him. So because of that, you know, it made a lot of sense. So as far as, you know, him wanting to get guys in game shape, I think it makes sense that you're looking at this game and saying, okay, as much as I'm worried about him losing, you know, confidence because they might put 7 or 8 on him, at the same time, he needs the ice time to get better. And the same thing for a guy like Brock Besser, same thing for a guy like Elias Pettersson. Right now, you kind of have to play these guys out of it.
Yeah, and Besser, as we know, Boudreaux wants to lean on Besser. He sees a lot in his game, so I can only imagine that's going to continue. Nikita Kucherov's hat trick goal just started playing on my phone, but that's a precursor to Thursday night. But Besser, Boudreaux wants and needs Besser to get going. He sees him as the spot to get more goals out of this roster, and it just feels like he trusts Besser right now to give him something more than he trusts Elias Pettersson at this moment.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as Pettersson is concerned, like you mentioned, they're going to have to get him up to speed if they want to keep staying in this race. A lot of texts coming into the text inbox, 650-650. Nate from Colmock, we haven't even seen 75% of the best PD best yet. He's been an extreme disappointment and a ball of sadness on the ice. And this one says, you need to play sadder music after a loss. And yeah, a lot of sadness. The Canucks lost their first regulation game under Bruce Boudreaux. So perhaps it's not quite that bad. We'll see how it goes. A big game coming up against Tampa on Thursday, right? As much as, hey, this one was a bit lopsided on the scoreboard, despite the fact you played a bit better than the score indicated, it doesn't get easier on Thursday. So you have to be a lot better than you were tonight. And that's no guarantee you win the game. It's just a guarantee, perhaps, or at least maybe a better likelihood of you not coming, you're not being the receiving end of a lopsided score. And that's the thing you also want to avoid against a team like Tampa. It's one thing to stay in a game. It's another thing to really stay in a game.
Well, you just have to be sharper. You can't make big mistakes against these teams because they're going to absolutely crush you. They are too lethal offensively. And that's what happened tonight against Florida. It's going to continue happening on this trip if the Canucks don't clean up those little parts of their game that worked against them tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of reaction on the text inbox and also on Twitter. I know a lot of people are asking about Kodak Black. I don't know. All I know is I don't know. So I'm staying away from all that. I know people are asking about it. I don't know exactly what that was all about, so I'm just leaving it alone. That's all I'm doing right now. Orion and Shemanis text into the text inbox. I think the Canucks deserve some reasons or excuses for this loss. 3 games in 25 days. Rusty facing the league's first place team after a 12-2-day and 10-day break without games. But I like how the Canucks outshot the Panthers 43-27. Go Canucks. That's Ryan and Shemanis. And Rafe and Nelson says, I complained about the team needing a warm-up game against Ottawa. Ottawa obviously can't say it would have made a difference, but I can't see how it wouldn't have hurt. And a lot of people bringing up that game against Ottawa that got canceled. And we'll see how that impacts things as things go along long-term. But as a season goes on, especially in a world where with all these COVID situations ongoing, it's going to be hard to pin it on one game, isn't it, Dan? Like, I understand the frustration, and yes, it would have been far more beneficial for the Canucks to play the game against Thursday, against the Senators on Thursday, but I don't know if I can pin the season on one game against Ottawa.
It would have been nice to get the warm-up game against the Ottawa Senators. Maybe it helps them in this game against the Florida Panthers tonight. But what I know is the Panthers are one of the elite teams of the National Hockey League. The Canucks are not there. So this was always going to be difficult, whether they played Ottawa on Saturday or not.
Let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650 after the Canucks lose 5-2 in Florida against the Panthers. We have Dan in Abbotsford on the line. Dan, thanks for calling in, man. What do you have for us tonight?
Yeah, so gentlemen, a couple of things. I mean, I know that they outshot them and it looked like they worked really hard, but I still think, like, as a team, they were a little slow. And I think for Pettersson, I really noticed it tonight, like his decision-making. And you kind of wonder, and this isn't, again, to rag on and to beat a dead horse, but you kind of wonder how negatively the way that Travis Green coached and developed. And, you know, you could see this massive difference. And I don't know if it's because of the way that they wanted to change the way they played in terms of defense first and positioning and being positioned. When he does come up the ice, he's just completely overthinking. And when something doesn't go his way, the head's thrown back. And, you know, he's competitive. You know, I'm confident that he'll get out of it. But I really wonder why Bruce, you know, Coach Boudreau there, hasn't put him back with Miller and Besser where he would be comfortable and would be able to kind of maybe play himself out of the funk that way. And I know that they're worried about their center depth, but very clearly, at least in my opinion, I know they've won some games and they've been close. I don't think all the lines are really like super good. They've had moments, but I think the lines have not gelled and just something hasn't looked right with the lines, even with it the way it is. And maybe I'm wrong, but you know, I'd like a comment on that because I think that that's a big factor into why he's not performing. I think, you know, what happened prior is still in his head.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That's Dan in Abbotsford. And, you know, the point that he makes, he's right. There hasn't really been a real chemistry between anybody in the forward group consistently. Like, Bo Horvat played with Pearson for a while. Miller and Pearson had played for a while, right? But everybody's kind of switched around. Nobody's been consistent together. And it all comes back to the same thing, Dan, Elias Pettersson. When your best or most talented player and your highest paid player hasn't found his game yet, it doesn't allow the other lines to get settled. Because if he can't be the best player on the line, then that line's going to have a hard time being successful. And that means you have to do other things. That means you disrupt other things. So it all comes back to him again. I hate to simplify it, but Dan's right. There hasn't been great chemistry yet between anybody. And that's not to say they haven't been successful. It just shows you that how much better they can be once that happens. But it hasn't yet happened.
Well, the lotto line didn't work at the beginning of the year either. And Green tried to go back to it on a few occasions. It just never really gelled. And part of that came down to, again, Pettersson not playing at the level we expect him to. I think this is maybe not just about a short-term fix, but also a long-term, how does this team look when we have Miller, Horvat, Pettersson through the middle of the ice as our top three centermen? And Boudreau mentioned it in one of his first media availabilities. If I have those three guys through the middle of the ice, we're going to be pretty good. And so I think he just believes that if he gets those three guys playing that way and playing well, then all of a sudden everything else with this lineup gets a lot easier for him. But it all hinges on Elias Pettersson finding his game at some point.
Yeah, that's what it all comes down to. It always comes down to your best players, and that's just the story of the season so far for the Canucks. Quinn Hughes, Thatcher Demko on their game, have the Canucks back into the playoff race, but they lost tonight against the Florida Panthers 5-2, back to 500 on the dot on the season, 35 points in 35 games. We're going to get back to more of your reaction on the text inbox and also on the phone boards as the Canucks Center postgame show rolls on, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks Postgame Show. This is where you talk Canucks on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, those hurt. You know, we were in it. We started the second period really well, and then you know, we give up that one on the PK, and that one hurts. That's a great shot. but you know, we don't want to be giving up those chances. He's getting his way into the slot there for a good look, and we can't give that up. And then, you know, when they score, you got to come back with a good shift, and sure enough, they came back with a better one and scored again. So that's a backbreaker.
That is Canucks forward Jason Dickinson, who did score a goal for the Canucks tonight, but they lose 5-2 in Florida against the Panthers. The first regulation loss under Bruce Boudreau and the first game of a tough five-game road trip through the East that continues on Thursday against the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll play Jason Dickinson's full comments a bit later in the show, and Ian McIntyre will join us during the final segment of the Canucks Center postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. We'll go to the phone board, 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650 coming up in a bit. But what is happening on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, Dan? 650-650.
Well, still a ton of reaction to Elias Pettersson. Sat B says, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Pettersson doesn't finish his contract in Vancouver. Not saying he gets traded at the deadline. Just saying he's not long for here. So, you know, we're about an hour later than when we usually do Not Saying, Just Saying on Canuck Central, Sat, but B is still coming in with the submission. And this one, on the flip side, Colin from the Caribou getting a little sarcastic. I can't figure out why Petey is slumping. It's almost like he's coming off a major injury that's impacting his shot and confidence. So both sides of the coin there from the Dunbar Lumber text line. And, you know, I get it, but how long are you willing to give Pettersson the benefit of the doubt that it's the injury that is affecting his play? I mean, it's hard for me at this point to say we're 35 games in and that's still what's holding Pettersson back from playing at an elite level. It's not like it's just the shot that's affecting him. His whole game has slumped a little bit.
Well, and here's the thing. Even if he wouldn't score but played well, I'd sit here and say he played well. Like tonight for the Canucks, for instance, they weren't fantastic. Florida was still the better team. They won 5-2. They're more talented, and you saw when they decided to take the game over. But if we're being realistic about how the Canucks played, even up until the third where the Canucks, you know, Florida's up 5-1, have the game in hand, score effects and play for the third, right? Take that out of the equation. The Canucks still did outchance the Panthers as far as the shot metrics go. So it's not like they weren't in the game, right? So they did some things well tonight. So you can sit here and say, okay, the Canucks lost 5-2, but they weren't terrible on the night. They clean some stuff up and they get up some better goaltending and they don't make as many mistakes. Even against a team like Florida, it's a much closer game. And hey, at least you can maybe be in the game against Tampa coming up on Thursday. That's almost an equally as good or perhaps even better than Florida, despite Florida being the hotter team so far this season. That's a tough opponent coming up. But you can say that, okay, as a team, if you just play a bit better, get a bit better goaltending, and make a few less mistakes, then all of a sudden against the Tampa Bay Lightning, hey, maybe you don't win that game, but it could be a really exciting close hockey game up until the end, right? You can be in a game like this. There's a difference between, you know, hanging in a game and actually being in a game, and perhaps you can actually be in a game against Tampa on Thursday if you play a bit better. But for Pettersson, the process, I can't say the same thing. I can't say that, hey, he was really good tonight and he outchanced the opponent and he'll be a lot better coming up against the Lightning on Thursday. I hope he's better against the Lightning on Thursday, but at this point, who can predict when he's going to get out of this?
Chris in Surrey on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Pettersson's career is looking a lot like Patrick Laine's. Pettersson is Laine 2.0. So it's getting harsher and harsher on the Dunbar Lumber text line when it comes to Elias Pettersson. This one, Nate from Sad Canucks Land. Hopefully it'll get happy one day, Nate. We're all hoping. How about Cale Makar only having one less goal than Pettersson and Miller combined? Yikes. Cale Makar is just that damn good. And look, I wish I had good things to say about Elias Pettersson and something to really give you a bunch of hope, but it really all stems back to what we saw earlier in his career. We know he has it. We know he has the high ceiling. We know he's got the hockey IQ, and he can do some things that just most players in the NHL absolutely cannot. But we haven't seen it recently, and it is frustrating to see a player that talented continue to struggle as much as he has. Now, another player that's coming under fire on the Dunbar Lumber text line sat is Nils Höglander. This text, unsigned: not too good of a night for Mr. Höglander. 8 minutes of ice and a dash three. Yikes. It hasn't been great for Nils Höglander. There was moments where you could say his game was strong, but he just wasn't getting production to go with it. Tonight was a night where you can't necessarily say that.
No, you can't. And his ice time was affected. He did play more than eight. He played just a shade under 10 minutes, 9:56, I believe, on the night. So just a bit less than 10. And, you know, it's not like Boudreau has been tough on Höglander. He has said good things about him, but he's also been pretty honest about the things he's got to be better at. And for him to play, you know, less than, you know, just around 10 minutes in a game like this, it does tell you a bit. It does tell you that he is definitely prioritizing other guys to get played into shape. And that meant that instead of Höglander playing 14 minutes, that those extra 4 minutes went to Brock Besser, who played 22 minutes tonight. So it was very clear who Bruce Boudreau tonight wanted to get into game shape quickly against the Lightning on Thursday.
Yeah, and you know, with Höglander, like, there is a lot of elements to his game that do work, and you know, he's in a lot of ways like Garland. Okay, maybe they are diminutive in NHL standards, but you know, they can play a bigger than their size really shows, and they can win battles along the wall. They can do win in some dirty areas, and it's part of how they play. Just having a chip on their shoulder because they've been doubted their whole careers for being short guys, right? And we haven't seen it lately from Höglander, but I think it goes back to what Dan and Abbotsford mentioned, a previous caller, in there are times when you just feel like Boudreau is still searching for the right mix with this forward group. And I'm not sure ever since he split up Pearson, Horvat, Höglander, that Höglander has really found his place in this lineup.
No, he hasn't yet. And he's one of those players that has to still develop. It's only in his second season yet. We don't quite know what Höglander yet is. Is he going to be more than a third liner or middle six forward? Can he be a higher end scorer for this team long term? Can he have a big offensive jump? He hasn't shown that yet this season, but it's only his second year in the NHL, right? And we'll see how he develops over time. But he is a bit of a question mark still, right? We know he's an NHL player. We know at the very least he's a capable third liner that gives you energy. He can forecheck. He can give you a bit of scoring pop. He can play on the power play for you if need be. He can do a lot of different things for you. But is he more than that, right? And that's one thing we're going to have to find out over the next little while. A lot of good reaction coming in on the text inbox, 650, 650. Preet from Ladner. Even Kodak Black is better at scoring during hockey games than PD. And Sonny in Burnaby, just happy to have Canucks hockey back, not as happy as Kodak Black. So again, I'm not quite sure about this Kodak Black situation, but hey, people are texting in about it, and that's one of the things going on. And this one too, unsigned, still one of the most entertaining losses we've seen in over a month, coming into the text inbox too. So a lot of good reaction coming in on the text inbox tonight, Dan. So people are having fun with it, and that's what you need to do. It's the first loss, right? The first regulation loss under Bruce Boudreau. But I will say, okay, if I have one criticism though, Dan, I will say I'm not sure I like Pettersson net front on the first unit power play.
Yeah,
I will say that.
That was interesting. So it was first power play the Canucks had on the night. We didn't get to see was different. Yeah, Pearson was there because JT Miller was in the box. He was fighting Radko Gudas. But the second opportunity they got, it was the four we normally see: Pettersson, Besser, Horvat, Miller, and Hughes. And the setup was Pettersson down low, Besser in the bumper, Horvat on the left half wall, Miller in the one-timer spot position, and Hughes obviously quarterbacking on the point. Now, I'm with you on this. I don't know if that's really the best spot to get Pettersson. I'd rather have him on the left half wall, working downhill, and acting as that second playmaker to the power play and what Miller was usually given the job to do, than having him down low there. I don't feel like that's the best spot to have Elias Pettersson either.
No, I'm not a big fan of putting him in that spot. I think it's, I understand what Boudreau's doing, trying to make him a bit uncomfortable, do something different, have success doing something different, get some confidence and all that sort of stuff. And if movement does start happening on the power play, he can pop out all of a sudden for a one-timer. I think if you get into rhythm, I can see the benefits of it. But I think it's a big ask for him, considering he's struggling as much as he is, right? It's a bit too simple, I think, of a role for him. Because that simplicity is supposed to turn into more complex things. But you have to feel good about yourself to do those things. And right now, he's just not.
I will say I do like Miller better in the one-time spot than Pettersson right now.
Well, he's more productive. He's the more confident player. Yeah. His shot's more effective right now.
He's more willing to take that shot, right?
Right. Well, and that's why the power play has been better.
Yeah.
Right. It, you know, like it is starting to near the top 10 in the league. It's over 20% in efficiency now, and that's a respectable number. Once you get into the 20% range and above, you got a good power play. You get above that, it becomes a great power play, and that's what they're capable of. That's what they showed a couple years ago. But the longer it takes for you to show it again, the less you can point to it and say that, hey, they can be this. You still have to show it again. They haven't done that so far, so no. It has to get better.
And that's, we talked about it in the pregame, but you know, how do you beat top opponents or better opponents? Arguably, you have to win on special teams. And this team has been able to do that under Boudreau, not so much tonight, but finding that mix for the top power play seems like, you know, it seems like a conversation that's never going to end with this current group of players, because it's been going on forever. And you know, we saw Pettersson get moved away from the top unit. Pearson was there for a bit. I hope they don't go back to that, but it's all contingent. This is like the Elias Pettersson postgame show. It's all contingent on Elias Pettersson finding his game at some point, as are so many things with this Canucks team, because it's like, you know, it's like having a puzzle that's missing a piece, and the Canucks are missing the Elias Pettersson piece. It just happens to be, like, you know, the most crucial piece of the puzzle, but that's what's missing right now for this Canucks organization, and it's going to decide a lot of things for Jim Rutherford moving forward.
No, it absolutely will. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox, 650-650. This one says, don't dismiss injuries causing a permanent drop in production. Naslin's goal and point a minute production dropped significantly and permanently right after Steve Moore's cheap shot causing bone chips in his elbow. And listen, all that stuff is true, and we'll see what Pettersson. It's far too early to draw any conclusions on it, but one thing we all know is he hasn't been his best. And Tim in Vancouver says, Canucks fans are far too reactionary and impatient, totally turned on Pettersson so quick. Hoglander is fourth in his draft class in career points. They just played pretty much the best team in the NHL after barely playing the last 10 days. Everybody relax. That's Tim in Vancouver. And hey, it's only the first regulation loss, and everything Tim said is true about being patient as well. And hey, the reality is,
but
they
Zach, their
all
play
that
goes
bad, but
their play goes back, you know, further than just you know, this game. You know, we're talking about now 30 plus games for Pettersson, and Hoglander's been slumping going into, you know, back all the way into December.
Well, I mean, and that's all true about the form. We can talk about it, right? And the question, hey, listen, the reality is players are underachieving, certain guys. Those two guys are underachieving. The question is, do you lose faith in those players, or do you just critique them and point out their current deficiencies or shortcomings? And those are two separate things, right? They're both criticisms, but they have two different conclusions at the end of the day, right? One is get rid of him. The other is, hey, you can still be patient. He'll still come around. And that's kind of what it comes down to. I think that's the difference that kind of has fans divided.
It's tough. You don't want to lose faith in these players. Nobody is, but they need to play better. I think that's just the obvious at this point with where the Canucks are headed.
And that's just the reality. We'll talk more about it on the other side. Ian McIntyre joins us. Plus, we'll have Jason Dickinson with his post-game reaction as the Canucks Center post-game show rolls on, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
You're listening to the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks post-game show, bringing you the most Canucks coverage in BC, only on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Another face-off win for the Canucks as Hunt gets it left point in the Panthers zone. Passes far corner for Garland into the slot. Dickinson shoots. He scores! Jason Dickinson from the slot threw it to the net along the ice. It got through Bobrovsky.
Canucks did get a goal. They got two, but they ended up losing 5-2 against the Panthers to start their road trip. And this is the Canucks Central post-game show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio, and you can listen to Dan and myself on Canucks Central every day on Sportsnet 650, 4 to 7, and you can listen to the podcast under Canucks Central on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of your favorite podcatchers, and we appreciate if you do review and rate the podcast as well. We do appreciate everybody listening and interacting with the show as well. And Dan, a big topic of conversation, of course, is Elias Pettersson and continues to be. But beyond that for the team, one thing that was also very clear for them tonight is if they don't get saves, they're going to have a hard time being in hockey games despite playing well. And as good as Florida is, you know, tonight, yeah, there were some goals he couldn't do anything about, but he wasn't at his absolute best tonight. But just like the rest of the team, it wasn't like he was bad. He just wasn't at his usual potential. And when you're not at your usual potential, it's hard for this team to really be in games against teams like this.
You're just not sharp, you know? And, like, I think we all know what sharp means. You know, some days you just, you're sharp. Question gets asked, you're on it, you're working good, whatever it may be, whatever line of work, whatever you're doing in your life, you know when you are absolutely sharp. And the Canucks were not sharp tonight. Demko was not sharp. I know this texter is blasting Demko, saying that the reason they lost, they outshot the Panthers 2-1. The reason they lost is because of Demko. He cost them the game. I think that's harsh. I think by now you should also know that not every shot on goal is created equal in the NHL. There is quantity and there is also quality. And I think the Panthers did a great job of getting quality chances on the Vancouver Canucks, even though the volume favored Vancouver tonight. So you have to be realistic and honest about the situation, but it does come down to sharpness. And I think that can be said for Demko, and that can be said for the players on the ice as well.
Well, and that's the thing. When this team is a bit sharper, we see what they're capable of doing. And tonight, they weren't sharp enough, and they're going to have to be a lot sharper on Thursday against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And we'll talk more about that as the show goes on. Ian McIntyre is going to join us as well coming up in a bit, and we'll play Jason Dickinson's comments in its entirety coming up in a couple of minutes. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, Dunbar Lumber, 650-650. Michelle says, with Bruce's experience with numerous other teams, I am disappointed in not seeing greater adaptation and strategies implemented, called upon as the game progressed, allowing our athletes greater success. And I think she's referring to a lot of key players on the team and how they're playing in general. And I did think that Boudreau did address and was asked about, okay, what are the things you worked on during the break by Bic, and you know, what did you see and what do you need to be better at? And he did kind of talk about that when they forecheck, they're really good. When they move pucks, they're really good. But their biggest problems was making decisions in the neutral zone and mismanaging the puck. So he kind of got into what they're good at and what they're looking to do and where they had kind of issues. And as far as Pettersson is concerned, well, yes, you know, Boudreau, we talk about him getting the most out of his best players, and so far he hasn't found the answer with Pettersson yet, and that's going to be the big enigma for you to figure out. We can continue to talk about everything else, but it still always comes back to him with every question, doesn't it?
It always does. And the Canucks put out a video today of some of the things Bruce has been doing with the team, and got a lot of hype on Twitter. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. And at the end of the video, he is, you know, talking with Elias Pettersson, and you know, I think you can see the at least the gentle hand that Bruce Boudreau is trying to work with Elias Pettersson and push him into the right directions. but it's a process right now, and the only one that's going to get him out of it is Elias Pettersson himself. There's only so much that Bruce can do, but I think you can just tell in the way that Bruce speaks, he is honest, and he knows how to play the game, and he has been around a while with the media and is experienced in that sense. And he didn't hold much back with his team. Not like he blasted them, but he wasn't afraid to say where this team struggled tonight. And I think that's important because, you know, they're going to continue working on these things. But a team like Florida is going to expose you. That's the reality. They're the highest scoring team in the league. They expose pretty much everybody. They put a 9 spot on the Lightning not that long ago. I mean, this is what the Florida Panthers do. It's not like the Canucks are the only victims of it.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, I understand the frustration as well as far as the team not reaching its potential goal scoring wise. And that's what this text says. I'm kind of getting sick of the common theme of the Canucks getting goalied when they lose. You think no other team is goalied. If it wasn't for the Canucks goalies tonight, it would have been even worse. And Canucks wouldn't have half the wins they have anyways. And, you know, again, it comes back to Pettersson, but we're not going to just harp on that. And as far as the rest of the production, you know, Bo Horvat has some goals on the season, right? Like, but as far as even strength production goes and, you know, carrying or being a bit more productive, he hasn't been at his potential either, right? Like, he's been below what he normally is on pace for. So it's not just Pettersson who's been kind of lacking in the scoring. And as much as we talk about the defense being better, and they have been, and I've defended the defense a lot this year, especially Myers and OEL and Quinn, of course, who has been productive on the season. But at the end of the day, if we talk about this team being better offensively, you also need to get more of a bottom line for your back end. I know OEL plays a shutdown role, Dan, and, you know, he's got to be good at that, and he has been. And I know he got turned a bit by Barkov tonight, but I do think that you need to get more from that bottom line as well. And if you want your forwards to be more productive, you also need your defense to chip in a bit as well. And it can't just be Quinn Hughes. So I do think as far as what things they can still improve under Boudreaux, and they've been hugely successful. 8 wins, 1 regulation loss, the first one coming tonight, and 1 shootout loss. So that's a great record so far for Boudreaux, but that doesn't mean you don't have things to improve on and be better on as a team. And those are things this team has to get more production from. And we talk about Boudreaux and the effect so far, and hey, it's tough to be overly critical because they just had a 10-day layoff, right? And they've been so successful. And, you know, you're not going to say, oh, they can't figure this out or whatever. But that's one thing that has to come. And we talk about it from these guys, and we spent a lot of time at Canucks Central discussing, you know, secondary scoring and that coming from a lot of different areas this year. Eventually, that's going to have to come too. We talk about Pettersson, but those secondary players, they're going to have to start chipping in as well, Dan.
Yeah, and look, they've got it from Pearson in Boudreaux's tenure. Pearson has been dynamite. You've had JT Miller still going. Besser was doing his thing. Horvat's found the net. So you're getting it from several other guys, but you're still not getting it from one of your main guys and elsewhere through the lineup. Hoglander's dropped off. Dickinson has been getting some opportunities. He did end up scoring tonight, but hasn't been able to finish on a lot of them. This team can't, like, you have to score more than 3 goals against the Florida Panthers if you are going to have a chance. You're going to have to score probably more than 3 goals Thursday against the Lightning and again on Saturday against the Carolina Hurricanes. And there's too much offensive talent on this team for it not to score enough to win hockey games. Like, I can live with this team having miscues defensively because I know that's where their talent is not, but, you know, they should be scoring goals. Like, there's offensive talent on this team. They need to be scoring enough goals to kind of show it.
Well, one player who did score tonight was Jason Dickinson, and a player that was also praised by head coach Bruce Boudreaux, commenting on how well Dickinson played. Fact that he was also in protocol and missed so much time. And here is the Canucks forward after scoring a goal tonight, despite the Canucks losing 5-2, talking post-game about the game and what happened tonight.
I don't think it's any secret what their game is. They're a good transition team, high offense, and they capitalize when they get chances. So you got to minimize
turnovers, minimize breakdowns, and you know, try to stifle their offense by playing stingy D.
Your goal, it looked like you got it away in a hurry. Was that the key to having it slip under Bobrovsky's pad there, Jason?
I think so. There's obviously pressure in the slot from their weak side winger. So I was just thinking I got to get this on net and give it a chance.
We'll move to Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet.
Hey, Jason. Obviously, it wasn't a great start for you guys getting down by two, but your goal made it a game. How much did those two quick goals by Florida in the middle of the second period, how much did that change things?
Yeah, those hurt. You know, we were in it. We started the second period really well, and then, you know, we give up that one on the PK, and that one hurts. That's a great shot. You know, we don't want to be giving up those chances. He's getting his way into the slot there for a good look, and we can't give that up. And then, you know, when they score, you got to come back with a good shift. And sure enough, they came back with a better one and scored again. So that's you know, that's a backbreaker.
And you probably played better than the score as a team. You outshot them 44-26. But should you be better as a team or more prepared, just, you know, skating legs and timing and everything for the second game after this first game in 10 days?
You know, it doesn't matter. We should be better on Thursday, just in general. We can't use the 10 days as a crutch to lean on. There's no excuses. It happened to this group last year, and they came out and they beat Toronto twice in a row. So, you know, you look at it on two sides of the spectrum, and two completely different outcomes. So it doesn't matter, I don't think.
That is Canucks forward Jason Dickinson after scoring a goal but losing 5-2 against the Panthers in Florida to start a five-game road trip through the East. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio on the Canucks Central postgame show on Sportsnet 650. And Dan, you know, one of the things that Boudreaux talked about during his postgame availability as well was not only what he wants this team to do, which is to get on the forecheck. And he did say when they're at their best, he really likes how this team plays on the forecheck, but also as far as the things that they can correct as a team. Because Dickinson did mention that swing in that second period where you give up the goal on the power play, that's one thing, and then you don't have a good enough shift to respond against the Panthers, and they go back and score. And I thought on that play that Demko could have played it a bit better. He reacted slow to Max and Mammon, who came in and kind of made it look way too easy than it probably should have. But regardless, the Canucks didn't bounce back well enough. But despite that, they did not quite fall apart as a team. And I thought I liked what Boudreaux mentioned about that, how they did kind of push back a little bit, and how JT Miller was one of the guys that didn't want this team to kind of, you know, get blown out of the building. So they responded pretty well after that timeout, didn't give up a goal in the third period. They did score a goal in the third. So as far as the response goes in a game where you were outplayed and outclassed, they did do a good job in the third, I thought. And I think that does count for something. It's not a moral victory, but I do think it does count for something for a team's mentality coming off the stretch they've been on.
You want to be able to have something tangible to point to. As a coach, you want something to have tangible that you can say, this is, you guys won that third period. Let's carry that to Thursday against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it may be an intangible, but if you haven't learned by now that how much professional athletes need to be in the right mentality to reach their peak and to have success, well, you haven't been paying attention. And that's where I think Bruce Boudreaux is seeing with this team. He's looking for anything to boost their confidence. They had a strong period. There was elements of their game that worked really well. All the things we did wrong, these are correctable. You know, sloppy in the D zone. We didn't close our gaps. He mentioned that in his post game. You know, these are correctable mistakes. Puck management, correctable mistakes in a lot of ways. So when I think about Boudreaux, I think of how from day one, his thing has been, I have to find a way to get these guys' confidence up. And he doesn't want to lose that now that he's found a little bit of it with this team. And I think that's maybe the one part of the 10-day break that, we haven't focused on enough, Sad. It's they were on a roll, and you know they got cut off because of how this has all played out. Sat's on mute. Is he on mute? I think so.
Or did we lose? There we go. Yes, that I was actually. My apologies on my end. It always happens at least once a show. All right, let's bring in Ian McIntyre into the conversation. The quadruple threat, always doing his best, and now he's here on the
quadruple
post-game
now?
Show.
Unbelievable.
He is. He is. We put an extra on it, man. Like, you know, that, Hockey Night in Canada is also now part of the portfolio.
Dan, if guys knew what a 5 or 6 time threat was, I think that's quintuple. That's what I would be.
Yes.
I'm just threatening everywhere and everything I do. Get used to it.
It's a facts only, Sat. I think that's iMac just speaking the truth here.
Yeah, yes. But I you know, Dan, I got to give you credit because you were the first one to really embrace the triple threat.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you kind of being traditional about it, like sticking to the original, the classic.
That's how we got to do it.
Yeah, I decided
more
to
than
up
three.
The ante.
There's more than three things I do badly. So.
We don't need to focus on those things.
Those are the true threats.
We like to usually point out what other people when they make mistakes, especially hockey players and teams and organizations. Ian, that's far easier.
Well, I know, and it's more fun. But honestly, when you've been doing this as long as I have, you realize one of the important things is to understand that if we're going to point out the flaws and fallibilities of others, we should do it to ourselves too. So, I'm always happy to do that. I'll get all the counseling I need in retirement. Do you get benefits in retirement? Not that I'm about to retire, but. Eventually, I'll get fixed. How about that?
These are the questions we ponder on the post-game show. Yeah, so we'll have them figure it out at some point. But Ian, as far as the game was concerned tonight, you know, what was your main takeaway from what occurred tonight in the first regulation loss under Bruce Boudreau?
Part of that question faded out, Sap. But my main takeaways is just Florida is really good. And Vancouver wasn't good enough. And Vancouver did a lot of things well. I do think they outplayed the score. It shouldn't have been a 3-goal loss based on the shots. And if you look at the fancy stats tonight, you know there's great fodder here for the debate about, you know, analytics versus naked eye, because you know the fancy stats, a lot of the best players in this game, or the guys who appeared to be the best players like Huberto and Ekblad are actually underwater at 5-on-5. But Florida is just a formidable, dangerous team, and the Canucks made too many mistakes, as Boudreau alluded to. Canucks made too many mistakes with the puck in giving up quality scoring chances, transition chances. And, you know, it was the quick strike again that, I say again because the first time it's happened in Boudreau, but we've seen it a lot, where you know one goal against is followed by another, and there were two sequences of that early in the first and midway through the second, and that was really the only difference in the game. If you can't take those out, obviously, and we know that there's score effect, and so even though the Canucks outshot the Panthers 17-6 in the third, I think it would have been different had the game been, you know, 2-2 instead of 5-2. But the Canucks just gave up too many quality scoring chances. And, you know, what my worry now is just how do they kind of re-energize and get ready for Thursday? Because we saw the last.
I think we lost Ian McIntyre, so we'll get him back and connected here on the post-game show. But, you know, you have to read – I think what he's alluding to here is you have to start rediscovering something pretty quickly. And let's bring Ian back. So you kind of trailed off there at the end, just as you were talking about what they have to get better at here as a road trip continues on.
Yeah, I think the challenge now is to kind of re-energize. They need to be better with the puck. And I think we all figured that this could be a struggle initially with all the time that they've missed. you know, just that crispness and the execution. They need to be better at the puck, better at getting out of their own zone, better at getting through the neutral zone. But the real challenge here is now, if you think of the break they had around Christmas, you know, they were really good first game back against Anaheim and then really poor the second game back against LA. And that was back to back. They do have a day in between here. So it's not quite the same, but this trip isn't getting any easier. You've got the Stanley Cup champions, and then you have a pair of matinee games on the weekend back to back against top six teams. And so you're essentially going from playing the Florida Panthers to playing three games in 3.5 days on the road against elite teams. So the challenge right now is immense. I like a lot of the things that the Canucks did tonight, but they're still just going to have to be better in a bunch of areas if they hope to beat Tampa.
Yeah, and you know, you might be able to beat Ottawa, which was the game that was postponed over the weekend, when you're not at your best, but against Florida, Tampa Bay, Carolina, Washington, it's not quite as easy. And I think that the rust or the lack of sharpness maybe showed most in Thatcher Demko tonight. IMAC, do you agree?
Yeah, but when I look back, I'm hard-pressed to say that this goal he should have had or that goal he should have had, but he certainly wasn't taking goals away from the opposition. Well, having just said that, those words out of my mouth, I do remember about five-star saves too. But he wasn't as good as he was before the break. And as you know, we talked on TV that so often when teams are off for a while, and Bruce Boudreau has said a couple of times that he notices a difference in sharpness. If you give him one day off, like not 4 days off or a week between, just give him one day off practice, the next practice is not as sharp. So it's natural that you're going to not be as sharp after 10 days, but we tend to think of it in terms of you know, the connectedness of the players on the ice, the skaters, and how's the passing, and how's the puck support, and is everyone in the same slot, and just how is the speed generally? How are the skating legs? And we don't really tend to think of the impact on the goalies, when in fact, it probably has more impact on the goalies than anybody, especially for a starting goalie like Thatcher Demko. It as often as he has, loves to play a ton, as most guys do. Jacob Markstrom was the same way. But now he's completely lost whatever rhythm he had. And although he's rested, and although he's had a lot of practice, just like the rest of the team has, he's lost that game feel, that game rhythm. And so that's a big, big challenge. And I'm sure he wanted to stay in the game. In the third, typically this might have been a game where, had the Canucks played three nights ago and, you know, two nights before that and on this road trip, that's a game typically where maybe you take your really busy starter out and you give him a breather in the third period and you get your backup some playing time and you let the starter just try to reset and get ready for the next game. I'm positive that Thatcher Demko would have wanted to stay in, and they would have decided to leave him in because he needs the work, because they could see what we could see, that, you know, after 10 days between games, that he needed the work. And so we'll see how he is on Thursday, but, you know, it's awfully hard just for a goalie to win a game, especially against teams that are as good as Florida and Tampa. So they're going to need more than just the goalie.
Well, that's the thing. And one player they need a lot more from is their highest paid forward, Elias Pettersson. And, you know, we talk about this every game, it seems like, on the post-game show. You know, is he going to break out? Is he getting any closer? And based on what we've seen so far, Ian, it's hard to be optimistic about him turning it around soon. That's not to say he can't do it. He's immensely talented, and he has the capability of doing so. But it doesn't seem like he's any closer every time you watch him.
Yeah, well, we're getting towards the middle of the season now. And I guess what's a little bit discouraging right now about a game like tonight, but also the last couple of games, is I really thought he was making progress. And even if I'm sure some people would disagree with me, but I really think he was engaged. And this even goes before the coaching change. You know, he was playing a lesser role at the end under Travis Green. And I think one game he started actually on the fourth line. but he was engaged. And you could see the effort. You could see at least he was around the puck. But lately, that seems to have regressed. And, you know, he's not around the puck, and you don't notice him much. And when you do notice him, it's for plays like that one late in the third period where he whiffed on the puck after a pretty nice setup by Hoglander. You know, just whiffed on the puck. And that's a guy, you know, that's not the layoff, although that's probably part of it. Or COVID and not practicing. And maybe that's part of it, but I think that's more about confidence and just not having a feel right now around the net and to be able to make plays. And we saw even on the, I think it was the first power play, threw one into the skates of a teammate. It was a bad pass. And then tried to take the zone and then pull up, and he lost the puck. And that was another bad play. He's just struggling right now in all respects, but I think the mental part of it is as tough as anything. And Boudreaux, again, who seems to be very sharp, he seems to know exactly what's going on with his team, has said that they need to get Pettersson's confidence back. They need to get him feeling good about himself and good about his game. But honestly, I don't really know how much you can do that. You give him the opportunity and the ice time. And certainly Boudreaux has given Pettersson the ice time. And although tonight Pettersson is playing with Hoglander and Pearson, which is more, I guess, like third line matchup type wingers, he played a lot with Garland and Podkolzin through December. So he's had opportunity, but they're just haven't been enough goals and scoring chances and nice plays by him, I think, to turn that confidence around. And this is going to be an ongoing issue, but we're near mid-season now. Maybe the whole season is going to be this way. I mean, that's the reality that I think you have to think is possible now, that maybe after the injury that he had last year, after missing training camp and coming in and all the pressure and all the baggage that he's carrying, because he puts immense pressure on himself to be the best, and not just the best he can be. He wants to be the best player in the world. And right now he's not close to the best player on his own team. And, you know, the reality is sometimes after all of that, it's hard to get yourself out of it in the course of a season. Maybe the whole season is going to go this way, but we still have a little more than half to go, but he has to start trending in the right way, because right now he's trending the wrong way.
So we've all had this this stretch kind of circled on the calendar after Jim Rutherford mentioned it in his first media availability. Do you think the Canucks need to have a certain amount of results that maybe help Jim Rutherford decide what he wants to do with this roster moving forward?
No, I honestly, I don't believe this road trip is the litmus test that it was going to be, the truth serum, as I called it, you know, a few days ago, just because of the circumstances. If the Canucks had been able to continue playing, and if they were adequately prepared for game tempo and game sharpness, then I'd say, yeah, you can see where they stand. Now, having not played in so long, having had several of their players, including two of their most important ones in COVID protocol, where you're not even practicing for a period of time. And also, we don't know. I mean, we presume that the symptoms were pretty mild, if they had any. And I'm talking about Besser and Pettersson, but they still miss time with COVID. And we just don't know exactly how they're feeling. We don't get a chance to really talk to them. I just think there's a lot that have piled against Pettersson right now, and so with this road trip, it's hard to, for me anyways, it's hard to view it in the same way as a measuring stick, the way that you would have, say, 2 weeks ago or when Jim Rutherford was hired. Where I do think it's very important, though, in determining what the club does, is they have to stay in some kind of contact with the playoff race. Because if they go back to, what were they, 9 points out when the coaching change was made? If they go back to 7 or 8 or 9 points out, and that could dramatically change what Jim Rutherford decides to do with this team. So I don't think it's so much about they have to show that they can beat these teams that are Stanley Cup contenders, because really, who is suggesting that the Canucks are a Stanley Cup contender or should be in the same class as most of the teams are playing on this road trip. But they do have to find a way to get enough points to stay in touch with the playoff race. Otherwise, you know, Rutherford may decide, well, this season, it was a nice surge in December, but this club has no chance to make the playoffs, and therefore he'll make roster decisions based on that.
Yeah, and we're still not at that point, but we'll find out how it goes. And we have another game to talk about, and that is on Thursday against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Ian, always a pleasure. Make sure to read Ian's latest on sportsnet.ca and hear him throughout the week on Sportsnet 650. Appreciate your time as always, Ian.
Nice being on with you guys. We'll talk again on Thursday night. Hopefully I'll have a better connection, but whatever I said when I faded out, I'm sure was my most brilliant, poignant observation. So
usually is.
Yes. The stuff you should have heard, the stuff I never said.
Yes. Oh, we'll never know. It's in the ether already. All right. Appreciate it, Ian. Thanks so much.
Good night, fellas.
Well, that's Ian McIntyre. I'm Satyar Shah. He is Dan Riccio. You can listen to us Monday to Friday on Sportsnet 650 on Canucks Central 4 to 7. And make sure to download us and listen to us on the podcast as well, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your favorite podcatchers. But always fun as always. Always fun as always. What am I even saying, Dan?
You know, time to wrap it up for the night.
Yeah, you know how you mentioned sometimes, you know, when you're not at your best and no matter what you do? Yeah, it's one of those nights, I suppose. Yeah. All right, Dan. Appreciate it, man. And thanks to everybody listening. And appreciate to those interacting with us on the phone boards and on the text inbox. And hats off to our producer, Josh Elliott Wolf. This has been the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.